Welcome to the Stand Up for Migrants podcast from the UN Human Rights Office. This series brings you inspiring projects that help change the narrative on migration towards one of hope, inclusion, and a larger us. Sometimes, despite our best intentions, we might inadvertently trigger a negative narrative on migration. And in this episode, we focus on why telling individual stories of migration based on common values can help avoid this pitfall. Austin Zhang is a jazz saxophonist based in New York. Austin joined UN Human Rights and This Alien Nation for a night of storytelling, in which he wove his own live saxophone music with a recording of his mother sharing her own story of migration from China to the United States. I'm your host, Christina McGilvery. Welcome to the Stand Up for Migrants podcast. Austin Zhang, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was such a pleasure to meet you and your compatriots at the event on the 20th, and I'm super looking forward to getting into this.
One thing I'm interested in talking about today is how movement of people helps impact music and helps me make music more rich and more textured. Can you tell me a bit about some of the musicians who influenced you and your style of music?
Jazz is, it's often called America's first or only original art form, and it's primarily influenced by one of the most massive migrations in human history, which was American slavery. I don't know if we should call that a migration, but a forced migration. And so all these African slaves were brought over to North America, and their rhythms and their music, their soul, their humanity is in blues, jazz, rock and roll, and pretty much the backbone of American popular music for the last couple hundred years. And we owe a great portion of that to African American history, migration, and the influence of other cultures.
Are there any specific artists who have had an impact on your work or inspired you?
Yes, absolutely. So one person I thought I would talk about is a great, brilliant saxophonist by the name of Paquito de Rivera. And Paquito Rivera was born in Cuba. There's a whole story of how he defected and had to leave his wife and children and just to pursue the music that he loved. And he was teaching at my university, the Manhattan School of Music, at which point in time I got to study with him very briefly. He's a brilliant saxophonist and clarinetist. And yeah, his music, both in traditional Cuban music, in jazz, in classical music, in all sorts of different genres, is just some of the music I find most beautiful in the world. And part of it, just because he's a virtuoso on the instrument, but also is his cultural identity. He's like a national hero in Cuba, and he has such a unique sound in jazz where he brings his cultural identity from his background, Cuban folk music, and he was very influential on how Afro-Latin jazz and Afro-Cuban jazz even developed. Wow, so what a figure.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you went about constructing that performance, and why did you decide to do it that way?
Yes, so This Alien Nation was on May 20th in 2022 at Joe's Pub in New York City, and it featured some really beautiful written accounts of migration, of stories coming principally to the United States and building new lives, and how that affected families, culture, communities. And it featured mostly writers and poets and talking about their stories. But I was invited to contribute as a musician and to tell some type of story about migration. So what I decided that I wanted to do was to bring in my mother's story of migration, where she escaped from communist China and worked many, let's say, menial jobs that were definitely beneath her education level just to make a living, and then eventually coming to the United States to later on have me and build a successful business and career for herself and give me opportunities that I would not have been afforded in that political environment that she was in. So I had this story and I had this skill set, and there was, I felt like the easiest way to put those, that story and my skill set together was to just record her telling her story in a video, in video form. And she did a brilliant job. And then I used my saxophone and certain electronic equipment, synthesizers and sequencers and pedals, to accentuate the emotions of different parts of her story.
Ever since I was a little girl, I strive to be better, always. And better for myself, better for my family.
One thing that I really enjoyed is that you included both her struggles, you know, the love she had and the moments of despair.
So my mother was born in 1963 during the beginnings of the Cultural Revolution in China, in under Mao's China. And this was, she was in a very poor village. I would say this was a very oppressive society to live in. There was certainly no concept of freedom of speech. Mm. She did feel, in her own words, a yearning for more freedom. Mm. And she was an extremely hard-working woman. There was no higher education available in China for about 10 years, I believe, from 66 to 76. Mm. She was one of the first students who was able to go to university after that ban on higher education was lifted. So by all accounts, she was doing pretty well, but she still felt that yearning for freedom in that society that she was living in. And the lengths that she went to escape really are something.
I'm yearning for more freedom. Freedom of life. Back then, it's really, really hard to get out of China. I have to borrow money, pay very high interest rate, to buy my way out. I have to pay back to the university all my 4 years salary in order for them to release me. Even more heartbreaking is the fact I have to leave behind 1 year old son, Charles, to my mother until before we can bring him, afford to bring him to with us to Japan.
And so when she quit her job at the university and defected to Japan, she had to pay back all her 4 years of salary to the university with, from at which she worked, which is like such a difficult concept for Americans like myself to grasp. Like, why would you ever need to pay back your money? But it was seen as such a unlawful and bad thing to do that you owed the government that salary that they paid you if you left.
That's terrifying. I mean, that would cause a lot of people to stop right there.
She had to borrow money from family members, from banks, or whatever means she could have, and hired, I'm sure, somewhat sketchy people to take her to Japan, where, you know, Japan was a very male-dominated society at that point in time. And, you know, the world has opened up a lot more since then, but, you know, definitely in the early 80s, her going to Japan, she didn't have very many opportunities as a female who didn't speak Japanese and had so many debts on her back to pay. She told me she was working in factories as a nanny, babysitter, cleaning tables. And I mean, waitressing and stuff is one thing, but she told me she would work in plastic factories with, like, fumes and textile factories. And it just sounds like she was just working nonstop for something like a little over half a decade. And that's someone who was a college professor. Yeah, it's something I'll never be able to fully grasp, because I'm here in New York City with a $15 minimum wage, and I complain about that. And, you know, I'm in places with, you know, relatively speaking, amazing work conditions, and I still complain about them, you know.
And I feel that time the Japanese culture is working. Just working. Purpose of life is working. Then I realized that's not what I want for my life.
I had to share my mother's story and just to give people that perspective of that side of life and how reality is for many people to this day. It was very important to me. And also just the gratitude that I have for her and her journey and how that has afforded me the opportunity to go to a private music conservatory in New York and to have the wherewithal to pursue a career in the arts and as a musician. And you could see that all on display at once, which it's hard to articulate, but just seeing my mother and her background and seeing her son do the thing that he's been allowed to do right there 40, 50 years down the line.
Yeah.
Like it was very special to me. Yeah.
As a first generation immigrant, how we raise our children, how our experience impact our next generation. We often ask that question. The most important value we can pass to our children is hardworking, integrity, and trusting yourself that you can achieve anything you want if you're willing to work hard. I tell my sons, Mom is always here to give you support and love.
It was very special. To me, a lot of what else added to that performance was hearing your mother's story, but that mixed media with you coming in on the sax and really adding to that emotional element. Can you tell me a bit about the process for how did you score it? You know, how does it help bring that story to life?
My work over the past few years has just been trying to become more and more fluent with notes, with 12 notes, and how I can, I don't know if manipulate is the right word, but that's kind of the idea of make you feel a certain way without telling you anything.
Yeah.
And in this case, my mother was telling you everything. So that was already there. And how could I score music to it that matched her emotions to the deepest extent that I could manage? And so what I did with my mom's story is I divided it into starting with yearning for freedom and despair in China, backbreaking work in Japan, hope when she came to America, more depression, and then opportunity and success. So these were the different sections I was dealing with, and I was using my background in harmony to pick what I thought were the best chords to fit those emotions.
After a few months struggle, I realized I do need to start my life again. So I decided to go back to school to get my second master's degree. This time it's computer science. My second son, Austin, was born during the time I was in graduate school.
As someone who heard your mom's story for the first time, I got her role as a professional. I got her role as someone struggling. I got her role for sure as a mother. Mm-hmm. And all of the different emotions that came with that, both through seeing her story and hear her say it, but also through that texture that you brought with the music. And so much of what we talk about at UN Human Rights, especially under the Do No Harm banner, is to not reduce individuals to their, let's say, migrantness, or reduce individuals to one dimension of their personality. Each one of us occupies these many roles and has the entire gamut of human emotions. And I think you were able to do that beautifully in your performance, both with what your mother said, but also what we heard with that texture that you added. Another part of Do No Harm that we think about is to not think of migrants in groups, to think of people as the wonderful individuals they are, which we really got with your mom, and not reduce them to these single frames, like someone is a victim without any agency. The story of your mother was really, absolutely a woman with agency who was figuring things out. And also at the same time, to not only tell stories of just superhuman heroes, and your mom is a superhero, absolutely. But you, through telling her story, you wove in those moments of where she was reflecting on, can I do this? Or the moments of despair and her working through those. And to tell all dimensions of a person, which you accomplished so beautifully in 8 minutes. And I think it serves as a real example for all of us looking to tell these kind of stories.
Thank you so much for the kind words.
Tell me a bit more about the intersection of jazz and Chinese culture.
I would say it's developing, Jazz is starting, is in a very interesting point in time where it's starting to fossilize. Like Western classical music, is super fossilized. There are some adventurous contemporary classical composers doing amazing work, but by and large, when you think of classical music, you're thinking of, you know, Western European music from several hundred years ago. And now when you talk about jazz music, you're starting to think of 40s and 50s African-American music in America. And what's so exciting for me about living in New York is that's not really the case. Jazz is alive and it's evolving, and people are learning it and fusing it with Stevie Wonder and rap. And it's in a turning point. Does it become a type of evolving music that continues to grow? And like in that period where Afro-Cuban jazz was born, like where Paquito and all these different musicians from Cuba, they migrated to the United States and created this whole new genre of Latin jazz. Does jazz still have the potential for that? I think is a fascinating thought. So I would say if you go to China, there are jazz clubs, but it is the fossilized form. They're trying their best to sound like Louis Armstrong.
Yeah.
You know, and they're trying their best not to sound Chinese. You know, but one thing, an event that I participated in just a few weeks ago was the first AAPI Jazz Festival.
Oh, cool.
which it happened at Rutgers University in Newark, New Jersey, just a couple weeks ago. And I was able to bring my band to that group. And everybody brought, it's a new thing. Because I think for the history of Asian Americans in this country, especially specifically in jazz, such a niche community, is we've been trying to go unnoticed. We've been trying to not be thought of as the Asian one and try to be as good as everybody else who's always been there. And we've tried to suppress that side of ourselves. And there's something new starting where I feel like we're becoming more and more proud to be Asian, and we're trying to think of new ways to incorporate our own traditions and values and sound into jazz music. It's at the very beginning. And now there's, you know, so many young Asian Americans like myself going into American schools, and they're starting to learn about jazz at a very young age. And so there's all of a sudden this influx of people who look like me starting to play this music.
That's so cool. That's so cool. And that continues that tradition of just a breath of fresh air, or infusing the tradition of music with a new perspective. So that actually brings the conversation back to where we started.
Yeah.
Which was the wonderful new perspective that you are bringing to jazz in your work. Thank you so much, Austin. It's been wonderful, wonderful to talk to you. And I just loved your performance and feel so lucky we were able to hear more about it in the conversation today.
Thank you so much, Christina. It's been a pleasure. My website is Austin Zhang, or Zhang, ZHANG.org. And there you can sign up. You can see more information about me, but most importantly, you can sign up for my email list, where I can tell you if I'm playing a concert in your area. If you prefer the social media route, I am at Austin Discovers. Austin like the city, and Discovers like the word. At Austin Discovers.
Do you have an inspiring project or story you'd like to share? We would love to hear from you on Facebook or Twitter. To learn more about some of the strategies we discussed on today's podcast, you can consult our online toolbox on narrative change on migration. The Stand Up for Migrants podcast is produced by the UN Human Rights Office.